This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome in, everybody. I am Mike Moore, and Carol Lawrence, my co-host, is on a nice four-day weekend, as she has been doing during the summer, taking some much-needed and well-deserved time off, and that gives me opportunity to bring in some co-hosts who you have heard as an occasional guest, and now you're hearing Chef Patrick Hall pretty much every week until Carol returns. Of course, we hear you every week with your regular segment, but you get a little bit more time.
Air time. Yeah, this is the best part about it, you know?
So, yeah, well, we're very happy to have you.
We're happy that you guys have me. I really appreciate it, you know? So
I know you do, and you add a lot to the show. I got lots to talk to you about once we get later into the show.
Yeah.
We, of course, have guests that we'll be exchanging commentary with, and being that you're a beer guy, well, we should also point out that you are a director of culinary education at Lakes Region Community College,
The
Shaker Village, which is, as I've always said, got to be one of the best places to work anywhere.
It's definitely a good view, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It's my office door, you know. So.
Yeah, that's very cool. Hey, Food for Thought is brought to you by Integrity Health Coaching Solutions at Bedford and Londonderry, and soon in North Conway, integrityfit.com. In Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and they have a new opening, well, fairly new. I'm going to sneeze here in a minute. Oh, I hate when that happens and you feel it coming on, you're on the radio. In Londonderry, right off exit 593, this has a drive-through window. It's funny, been a radio 44 years, and I can honestly say, and this was a fear before I got into radio, I'm just a teenager in college, that someday I would get the hiccups on the air.
I was going to ask
never,
you that one day.
It never happened.
You know my barrage of questions whenever we're off. I'm like, okay, now when you did this, and it was funny that you just did that. I'm like, is he really? I'm like, I was always nervous about doing that. Every time I come in here, like I get a cough or something, and I'm like, do I do it? I just, you know, can they hear me if I turn around? You know?
So yeah. Well, it's one of those things that if it's, you deal with it and you have fun with it.
Yeah.
And I've never had to take myself off the air for that or any other sickness reason. I've been ridiculously fortunate and in good health, although back in, as some listeners may recall, in April, I lost most of my hearing for about 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
After I had both eardrums rupture. But, most of my hearing is back. A little nerve damage pre-existing, but after all, I've been wearing these headphones every day for 44 years.
Yeah.
And you got to know that's going to take some effect. You wear headphones when you're on the air so that you can hear your producers, like J-Doc talking to me or whatever. So, anyway, Chef Patrick Hall is here. In a couple of moments, we will welcome in, as part of our weekly beer segment with Michael Hopley Pierce. He is so cool because he does the work. He brings in the brewers, introduces us to them and you to them, and we talk about their brew, their craft brew. And he is just a wealth of knowledge. And he is a facilitator, as you'll find out. You just met him today for the first time. He will be one of the best people you know in terms of being introduced to other people. And I know you love beer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm still, like I said, still newbie. I've been doing it for about 15 years now and, started off just, with the kits and things like that. And then, one day bought a bag of grain and figured it out. And now it's, it's changed the whole way that I brew beer. But it's fascinating. I find it like culinary. You're always learning something new. Someone's always got something different to show you. And it's fascinating. So.
Very cool. So we'll be talking with Rob and Lisa North. They are owners and founders of Great Northern Ale Works, right here in Manchester on Holt Avenue, which is easy to get to, also right off of 93. They've got India Pale Ale IPA. They've got Robust Vanilla Porter and Smokin' Raunch Beer, Smoked Ale. I love that. So we'll find out what their story is and how things are going. And I guess there'll be tours at some point where they make the beer. So that I love that. Linda Thompson-Ditch is in Topeka, Kansas. Wrote for the Hippo at one time and lived locally. Now she is in Kansas where most of her family is. And so she gives us sort of a middle-of-the-country perspective on food, which is, significantly different than what we see on the East Coast, right?
She's a joy to talk with. She's very knowledgeable, and it's just, it's fun. Every week I've been here the last few weeks, it's just been great to talk to her. So, yeah, she's got a great approach.
And of course, you and I will spend a few moments talking about what's happening in the world of food. There was one story. You watch enough TV that you'd be familiar with, say, Papa John's, right?
Yes.
The pizza?
Yep.
All right, let me see. I had a pretty weird story. Oh, here we go. All right, so Papa John, he was doing commercials with, was it Doug Flutie? Yeah, he's got celebrities.
Peyton Manning.
There you go. That's who it was, Peyton Manning. All right, so somebody stole the iconic Papa John's Camaro over the weekend, according to USA Today. Yes, the very same one that can be seen in a fair amount of the pizza chain's commercials. The tale of Papa John's pizza is really a rags-to-riches story. In 1983, John Schnatter sold his 1971 Camaro Z28 for some money to start his pizza business. He got $2,500 for the car and set off to build his dream of a pizza company, which, of course, we know he has done in spades.
Yes.
Eventually, Schnatter found his original car and bought it back for $250,000.
Oh, my Lord. Are you kidding me?
So chump change, of course, if you are the head of a massive empire, as he is. Anyway, so Schnatter had driven it to a Detroit car show over the weekend. He woke up Sunday morning to find it missing,
his
quarter of $1 million, and really a very emotional, Sentimental, that's the word. After calling the authorities, the car was found in a driveway of an abandoned home by a landscaper who recognized the iconic design. Other than missing a plate and a bent license plate holder, the car remained unscathed. Also, there was an Altoid wedge between the steering wheel.
You've been drinking.
Yeah. So, and I saw the car, saw the picture online, and it's beautiful. So, basically, he paid 100 times more for it than he sold it for, $2,500 to $250,000.
Wow.
Now, I lived and grew up in Detroit or suburban Detroit. And the only time I ever had a car stolen was in Detroit.
Really?
It was a 1962 green Chevy Bel Air that I paid $390 for in 1969, before I started college. And the interesting thing was it was stolen off a lot of the University of Detroit, where I went to school. And that is also not a really great part of town. But back then, it wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
And car was stolen. In fact, it was the day that the rumors were circulating that there was no internet then, but on the radio that Paul McCartney was dead.
Oh, yeah.
So it was that, and I just remember driving around thinking, oh, this is a great day. My car's stolen, and Paul McCartney is dead.
How could it get any more worse?
Exactly. So the next day, I got a call from the Detroit police, and they found it. And the only thing that was missing, because I had a few things, some college textbooks, I had a bowling ball, and I had some sneakers, and that's the only thing that was missing was the sneakers. They left the car completely alone, not stripped, not trashed, nothing.
You know, it's funny because it happened to my wife when we were in Providence, and they stole the car, and she had it was a Toyota Corolla, and the only thing that they stole, they broke in there, and it was all you know, but they took the airbags out of him because
really?
I don't think there was no airbags back then.
No, there were not.
But and then we had same thing, knife kit, textbooks. And then there was, I think there was a coffee maker in there or something, like espresso machine that got taken too.
Okay, yeah, those aren't cheap.
No, those aren't cheap. But I mean, it was weird that they out of the whole thing, and I think they took the rims and the hubcaps, and it was you know, we found it out. So they took the car back and stuff, just to strip it down, I guess. You know, so I guess
was it usable or was it totaled?
It was drivable, but I'm sure once those things could be replaced, but I'm sure the insurance company just took it over. And,
yeah, here's a check, and be on your way.
Yeah. So, but.
Wow. You know, it's interesting, speaking of Detroit, which is my hometown, it is amazing how many pizza chains have come out of the Motor City.
I've never been to Detroit, and I've wanted to go.
Well, yeah. Detroit is experiencing somewhat of a rebirth downtown. I mean, it was the town was pretty much gutted, and there's a lot of reasons for it, and nobody wants to hear any of that now. But Detroit has had somewhat of a culinary history, as most big cities do, because of, the populations and the cultures. But for some reason, Detroit has been a hotbed of pizza chains. Domino's Pizza, Mike Ilitch.
Oh, no kidding.
Who is now one of the wealthiest person in Michigan because he owns sports teams, the Detroit Tigers, the Detroit Red Wings, and the Little Caesars.
Oh, no
which
kidding.
I remember as a kid in the 60s when it was just starting out. Domino's Pizza, also from Detroit.
No kidding.
Tom Monahan.
I didn't realize all that. You know, I don't spend enough time doing history.
And why would you? If you come across it, it's interesting trivia.
Yeah, that's.
But who cares?
Yeah.
Nobody here probably listening to me has ever even been to Detroit so who cares? But I just find it interesting. And now Papa John's, which I guess I didn't realize that he also started his chain in the Motor City.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. I always thought that the history behind that was that he worked at like a one of the other chains, mm-hmm. like a Pizza Hut or something like that, and then
yeah,
carried his
that
own
could very well
or something
be.
Like that.
And you know what? I can't say for sure that it began in Detroit. But I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I wouldn't be surprised either. But you know, the other thing I always think, and I don't know if this is, you know, people say, is there Waffle Houses in Detroit? Is
that that's more of a southern
one
thing.
Okay.
I don't remember ever seeing one. It wouldn't be a surprise because a lot of people from the South move north to work in the factories, the auto factories, and so country music was huge. They brought all their culture up. I mean, we're talking the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. There is still auto production going on there, but it's also being done in, you know, all over the country, California and Georgia and Ohio and Detroit. But
yeah, that's interesting. You know, like I said, I've never been to Detroit and always wanted to go.
Michael Simon has, I want to say, three restaurants.
Three.
He's got three or four in Cleveland, and he's opened a couple in Detroit. Greektown is a very ethnic and culinary part of the city. So for anybody listening that maybe has to go to a convention, if you're going to go to Detroit, head down to Greektown and some of the area. But other than that, be very, very careful.
I was going to ask you if they have, you know, certainly, you know, Boston's got an Italian section, and you know, same with Providence, if Detroit was like that too.
Detroit, now, of course, I haven't lived there for over 30 years, but there was a huge Polish section
in a
city called Hamtramck, which is actually a city within Detroit.
Yeah.
And it was just the most amazing place to go. It also had more bars per capita than any other city in the state. But it was old school, old country Polish culture.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we're talking. You go out in the morning, and there are little old women sweeping the street in front of their house, and just tidying up and making it very beautiful.
Wow.
And then, of course, plenty of galumpki and. Punchkis,
oh yeah,
and kielbasa.
And I think I've discussed this with you before, where I grew up in Western Mass over in South Hadley.
Oh yeah, Chicopee.
And that's a huge Polish area. So you go to like the Big E, they have those the big signs saying the Pachki's coming.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
One of those big ones, and then mm-hmm. you have the, you know, glumpkis. But I remember my neighbors and everything mm-hmm. being a kid getting together with them, and you know, I'm not Polish, but they would every Christmas make pierogies.
But
like, tons of them.
Yes,
like,
love them.
Crazy, you know.
Definitely comfort food.
Yeah,
and meant for northern climates.
Absolutely,
a lot of carbs.
Have you ever had what's it called? Grodzkis?
Probably, but
they open your garage door.
All right, we're gonna.
There we go.
Butterboom.
Ba-da-ding.
He'll be here all week.
Here on Thursday.
Welcome to the Chuckle Hut, starring Chef Patrick Hall. We're gonna come back. And we're gonna talk beer. All right, and I do want to remind everybody that there is an update on the traffic now. 93 North, oh boy, this is 2 days in a row we've had to tell you about traffic in 93. This one, though, a little bit away from where yesterday's was in Concord with the sinkhole. This is 93 North, just south of the Hooksett Tolls. Left lanes are closed. So if you're heading up toward the easy pass lanes, probably the two on the left may not get you there, but you can still pass through on the other lanes. 93 North, accident. Hooksett Tolls, just south of there, left lanes are closed. We'll if we get word that it's cleared up, but usually people will tell us when it's okay. We only hear from them when it's bad, so that's cool. All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk beer with Michael Hopley-Pierce and his guests, Rob and Lisa North of Great North Ale Works. Just ahead, this is The Pulse, Food for Thought, 107.7 WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It must be Thirsty Thursday, because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077. And now, Carol and Mike bring you MHP Untapped.
Yeah, I listen to that and I feel like I have to be at least 18 to listen to this segment, even though we're 21 for the beer aspect of it, or just because it sounds so adult. I like that. Michael Hopley-Pierce, welcome to the broadcast.
Does that mean I have to be an adult? Because I'm not planning on adulting today.
There's no chance of that ever happening.
Neither am I. I brought this one back.
Now, Chef Patrick has a phone app that, have you guys ever seen that screen thing? You probably have, because you're beer people, where you tip it up to your mouth and it looks like you're drinking beer out of the phone. I have to explain that because this is radio. And nobody would appreciate the fact that we're all laughing.
Yeah. So I'll hold back the air quotes as well.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we missed you last week.
I did too. I was thinking about you guys as you were recording, and I did not have a good enough internet signal in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota to join you guys and hear what Seth was saying, but I know I left you in good hands and him as well.
Whatever brought you to Minnesota? Do you have family there?
Well, my wife's great-grandfather in 1905 bought an island for $100, and by 1915 he had finished a house there, and he was an attorney, so he passed it through the generations as a corporation. The shares split as the generations go through. It's now in the fourth generation's hands, and this was the 100th anniversary of this piece of property, Mack Island, on Cedar Lake, which is it's probably 45 minutes from Brainerd.
Okay, I have heard of Brainerd.
Big town, you know, famous for the Big Blue Ox.
Yes.
So so we were there, dockside. I did a lot of cooking. I did a significant amount of beer drinking, read some books. People said to me, that's kind of what you do when you're at home, isn't it? Except the computer was turned off and the cell phone was turned off.
So you really went off
no
the grid?
Clock. I triaged my emails for about 10 or 15 in the morning, and if I had to again at night, and the cell phone, I had a voicemail message that said, call my office, and I looked at who called, and I took two calls that I knew would not aggravate me the whole week.
That's very smart. I just have one quick beer story that I ran across. I try to save them when I know you're going to be coming in, and then we'll meet your guests. A beer brewed using a favorite kid cereal that made an infamous debut around this time last year will make a comeback later this month.
Is this the Wheaties?
No. Oh. Well, I don't think so. Cerealiciously Count Chocula will be on tap at Black Bottle Brewery starting August 25th, which is, Monday. It will then travel to the Great American Beer Fest in October and will show up in bottles before Halloween. Black Bottle's Count Chocula beer is brewed with box fulls of the chocolate and marshmallow cereal made by General Mills. Last year, the brewery's owner bought out two local grocery stores' supply of the sugary stuff, leaving many in northern Colorado without their Count Chocula.
And you certainly don't want to have people in Colorado not be able to get their breakfast cereal. That's going to throw off the whole food chain.
Exactly. This year, Fort Collins residents can have their Count Chocula cereal and drink the Cerealiciously beer, too. General Mills sent all the Count Chocula cereal for this last batch, said Black Bottle owner Sean Nook. Quote, we are really lucky to have gotten it over a month ago. So that's just, there's a million stories out there like that, the little quirks of craft brewing. Does this one surprise you? Do you think it sounds good?
I don't know. I guess marshmallows are gelatin and sugar, so they'll ferment out and they'll help find the beer, drop the solids out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I would be concerned about any oils, but I brew one of our favorite cream ales. We use crisped rice to avoid any copyright infringement, but instead of using other forms of rice that brewers generally use on a cream ale, we just decided to make a crispy cream ale, and so we made a
crispy
cream ale.
So the fact that you call it Snap Crackle Pop shouldn't be a problem with the lawyers, right?
No. Well, we actually did a mock-up logo of the Snap Crackle and Pop dressed up as the Beastie Boys, but I cannot post it any place. It was pretty awesome. Throw down gang signs,
I was just going to say that. I was going to say the marketing on these beers must be great, seeing Count Chocula with a beer in his hand or something.
Exactly. Well, Michael, you brought along, as you often do, some craft brewers who I would love to have you introduce to our audience today.
It's my pleasure. I'm so glad to have these guys in front of a microphone. I brought today with me Rob and Lisa North from Great North Ale Works. These guys have been working on this. It's been sort of a shadow project for a while, and then it sort of crept across the event horizon a couple of months ago, and they are very close to opening their doors just off East Industrial in Manchester. So thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. So, in fact, I've been getting a press release or something over the last week, and I didn't realize that I would be meeting the folks who are responsible for the Great North Ale Works VIP open house next Tuesday. And so tell us a little bit about your product. I'm looking at your sheet. Looks like you have three different beers that you're making, or is there more than that?
Yeah, so we're coming out of the gate with three flagships that we're going to call them, an IPA, a big hoppy West Coast style American IPA, a robust porter with vanilla, a beer we called RVP. We've been homebrewing that beer for years now, and it was by far the number one beer that when people came over to our house, they expected to have it on tap, and if it wasn't, they got angry. So so something we wanted to, you know, bring to a little wider audience than our friends and family. And then the third beer we're bringing out is a beer we're calling Smokin', which is a Rauch beer style
of
beer.
Sorry, I said raunch earlier. I apologize.
That's all right.
I inserted an N where there wasn't one. I apologize. Yeah.
It's a dirty beer.
And the little bit of history behind that is I first brewed this this beer as a home brewer back in 2009 and entered it in the 2010 Sam Adams Patriot competition, where it was lucky enough to be the winner. And I earned the right to brew a 15-barrel batch of it with the brewers at Sam Adams, and it was on tap for the 2010 New England Patriots season at Gillette Stadium. So it was just an awesome thrill and an awesome opportunity.
How
so,
much competition was there for that particular
I think at that
award?
Particular one, there was a couple hundred entries. So it was a fairly, you know, fairly good field.
Yeah. Even with 10 or 20, you would be proud, right?
But yeah, absolutely. So, you know, so over the years, we've been tweaking and refining the recipe and, you know, make some changes here or there. So, so we're pleased to come out of the gate with three very different styles, but all, you know, flavorful, food friendly. Mm-hmm. That's what we're all about.
Lisa, what is your role in this whole production?
Oh, I have many roles. Tech support, moral support, also working on marketing, our work on our social media website. I have a full-time job, so this is part-time for me. So I go elsewhere during the day and help where I can on the weekends and in the evenings.
Is your I'm sure your opinion is very often solicited, or at least
some
feedback, sounding board.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tasting board.
Tasting board. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the worst idea he ever came up with?
I like that question. Yeah.
In beer?
Yes. Oh.
I like that answer.
I have to say, of all of the beers he has brewed, homebrewed, there's only one that I didn't really care for, and it was a take on a banana bread beer.
Yeah.
And it's probably the only one that I have not enjoyed.
Is she right, Rob?
Yeah, no, she's pretty much spot on with that. I think I was probably a year into home brewing and just like you know,
I can do this.
Like going, you know, just super excited and stoked to try different things. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make a banana bread beer, and I'm gonna use like bananas in the mash, and I'm gonna use a Hefeweizen yeast, you know, which really produces those banana flavors. And yeah, it was kind of a dismal failure. But that's the fun of homebrewing, you know, like the only thing you've wasted is, you know, 5 hours of your time and, you know, and 5 gallons of beer. And that's the way you learn and, you know, ultimately become a better brewer.
You can relate to that, Michael, I'm sure.
I'm thinking of an ill-fated haggis stout.
Oh,
no! I'm just kidding. No. That was great, lad.
and Chef Patrick,
bacon beer. That's mine.
Well, all right, let's talk about bacon beer. That was really bad?
It's just didn't go out right. Yeah, it's just we're just playing around, you know. So it's one of those things, and you know, I was doing a class where we just cured our own bacon and everything. I'm like, oh, let's utilize some of this stuff, and didn't go well. So
for our Rauch beer, a friend of ours, Todd Russell, he had the brilliant idea one time too. It's like, oh, we should add some like bacon bits to it. And almost like instead of dry hopping a beer like you would with an IPA, to dry bake-o.
You dry porked it.
And it was kind of disgusting. It sort of left it like a greasy, oily, like slick on.
That's
so thank goodness we only did that to a half gallon. So that was another lesson. Yeah.
I think we also served that in a glass that was rimmed with crushed up bacon bits.
Oh yeah, so we dip the rim of the glass in maple syrup and then into the bake-o bits and
a little overkill, huh? You know, it's funny about bacon. You think that bacon would be better with everything, and in the right perspective, it is. But you know, I'm a baker, so I make these really really good what I call chocolate infinity cookies. I thought, well, bacon bits in there would really, you know, what I mean, chocolate and bacon. It seems like a good pairing. Mm-hmm. You couldn't taste the bacon. Now, I probably could have added a little bacon grease to the batter, and I messed with that. I said, you know what? Let's leave success alone. You know, bacon for breakfast, and, you know, We'll leave it there. So, but you're right, and to Michael's point, you do have to experiment, and because the great experimentations, if you have nine failures and one home run, then it was worth it, right?
Yeah, there'd only be one kind of beer if nobody ever tried anything new.
Yeah, and for a long time, there was only about five kinds of beers.
Well, here, I mean, historically, there was a lot more, and internationally, there was a lot more selection than there was domestically 15 years ago.
Yes.
And most of the styles we're seeing a resurgence of now are historical styles that are either being rediscovered or they're innovations on historical styles. There's, you know, you're using grains and hops and water and yeast. There's only so many variables you can tweak. But it's good to see that some of these obscure styles are coming, like the Rauch beer, which if you have with you, I think we should probably do something
we've
never
done
before.
We're going to take a break. I'll let you start the pour. We are going to do it's a one flight anyway, but, you know, that's a place that we got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Since I've never done beer on the radio in 44 years, I don't think. But anyway, I have a good excuse to do that now because Patrick's going to drive me home later.
That's right. On to the brewery. Yes.
It's 12:44. Our guests in studio with Michael Hopley Pierce, Rob and Lisa North, the brewers and operators of Great North Ale Works in Manchester. Real easy to get to from many places because they're right off the highway. We'll be back with more just ahead. 107.7 WTPIL. We are the Pulse.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Brings us to 12:48, 107.7 WTPL. I want to let you know about an accident that occurred earlier in the hour, and I'm not really aware of the degree of difficulty it's causing, but you can assume that if it's 93 with the volume of traffic headed north on any given day, it's probably not fun. So there's an accident reported on 93 north, south of the Hooks at Tolls. The left lanes are closed. So I think at that point there's probably four lanes because they're already splitting out for the easy pass or the manual pay as some cases. So anyway, Hooks at Tolls just south, but 93 North, and yesterday, I'm sure everybody here saw the sinkhole on 93 North between exit 13 and 14, which also occurred at about this time yesterday.
Yeah.
So we need to find new ways to get up country.
Did they fix it? I didn't even.
They did. It's open now, but it wasn't done till sometime during the night.
Some giant robotic alien started crawling out of it in the middle of the night.
Actually, you know, it's funny you would say that because there were pictures going around on Facebook yesterday, and one of the pictures showed what looked like you could hardly see it, like a clown sitting in the hole.
Oh, like from It.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You saw that too?
No down here. Yeah.
We are doing our every other week beer segment with Michael Hopley Pierce, and he brings along, usually, brewers, and in this particular case today, they are now my new favorite brewers because they brought sample.
See?
This is Rob and Lisa North with Great North Ale Works, and there'll be a little bit of an open house for members of the media and other brewers, but at some point will you offer tours to people that just want to see how you make the beer?
Absolutely. We're not quite open to the public yet.
Okay.
We have a very important meeting at 1:30 today with our liquor inspector. So
we
do. And when he leaves, we hope to be able to announce our opening date, which will be a little bit in the future, but not too far off. So keep an eye out on our Facebook page, and we'll be announcing when the opening date will be. So
good to know. Let us know so we can mention it.
Absolutely, we will. Right. And we'll be doing tours, tastings, all that fun stuff that happens in a brewery tasting room.
Yeah. But so in the meantime, we have gone ahead and we've brewed our three core beers, mm-hmm. and we will be canning them on this Friday and next Monday. So we should have all our three core beers in store shelves in about a couple weeks.
Great. And you have brought along some product today, a couple of growlers. What you brought is the Smokin' Rock beer, which is 5.5% alcohol by volume. And it's got a very rich, a deeper amber color, which I'm sure I'm using totally inappropriate terms.
No, it's perfect.
But it certainly looks like it's going to make an impression on my tongue.
I'm really digging this beer. I'm not going to lie. I'm not just saying that because you're here either. It's smoke is one of those ingredients in a beer that 1% too much can be 100% too much, and 1% too little can go unnoticed. So it's a fine line. And I think you guys created a nice, hearty, malty backbone, not just with good malt flavor, but it's got a good solid mouthfeel behind it. It feels substantial when you're drinking it. And I think that kind of makes the smoke just seem appropriate versus an afterthought.
How is the smoke infused?
Yeah, so it's basically, so years and years ago, through the malting process, they would often use wood to fire up their kilns in order to basically malt the barley. Yeah. And that they still do this in Bamberg, Germany to this day. And we buy this particular malt from Weyermann, which is headquartered in Bamberg. So the malt has basically been smoked over beechwood, just like you would smoke bacon, pork, smoked almonds, anything like that.
Okay.
So yeah, that's where you get the smoke in the malt.
Sort of a holdback from pre-industrial revolution before they had smokeless coal.
Okay.
Kind of like Scotch whiskey, where it's you don't have to make it like that because you can now make whiskey with malt that never saw smoke. It was, well, now you can do it through radiant heat with steam or whatever. But when they invented smokeless coal, you could now make lighter varieties of malt because it burned at a more precise temperature and didn't generate smoke. But in some places, including Bamberg and Scotland, it was so deeply ingrained in the tradition that they decided they weren't going to change with the times, and it's sort of an anachronism. But I think it's really well done.
Chef Patrick, your thoughts on...
I think it's very well done. I like the finished taste that you get. It's that nutty flavor, but with the smoke at the end, it's very good and get at the back of the tongue.
But it's a really clean taste, despite the complexity you guys are talking about. It's like, surprisingly to me, not at all an expert, I don't get an aftertaste. I mean, this is it really makes an impression,
it makes
you want to have some more.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's what we're hoping.
And I'm Joe Average. Now I don't know if it's mostly craft brew fans that buy beers by makers like you guys, or how do you draw the public in that is used to buying their big brand beers.
Well, I think the tide is turning, and you can credit, the rise in craft beer in general, things like, Food Network and whatnot, and people are becoming more apt to try foods with flavor. You think, like the amount of salsa that's been consumed, today versus 30 years ago. So I think people are becoming more apt to look for things that really get the taste buds, stimulated. And, I think it applies to food equally to beer.
And I think from a distribution standpoint, I know talking to the folks at 603, they've said that since they started being in, I believe it was Hannaford's, that they can't even keep up with demand. And they have 80-barrel Brights now. They have a big, big system, kind of analogous to what you guys have. But they said that what really turned the tide was from going and selling in just the places that the beer geeks like me shop. Because, Joe Average is not going to go to Burt's Better Beers just so that he can get something that he's never heard of. He's going to probably, when he's shopping with his wife or by himself, he's going to go down the beer aisle and grab something that looks interesting because that's where he buys. And I think with you guys positioning yourself, I'm assuming with your distribution level, you're going to be in the big supermarkets. That's probably going to get you a much broader appeal than you would get by dealing with the hardcore niche market.
Right. Well, there's nothing more satisfactory than serving our beers to a friend who's like, I'm normally a wine drinker.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Man, I love it. Wow, the vanilla in this is great.
Well, sadly, our half hour has come to an end here with guests Rob and Lisa North. Their beer is Great Northern Ale, Ale Works. Three core beers available right now. I'm enjoying mine and available. We've only got about 20 seconds. How many places?
Throughout the state.
Terrific. All right. Hey, thank you so much. Continued success.
Thank you.
And I hope to come over sometime and have a look. All right. And another drink. All right.
Absolutely.
And Michael Hopley-Pierce, we'll see you in 2 weeks, buddy.
Thank you very much.
All
right. Good to be here.
See ya.
All right, this is Food for Thought. We're coming back in just a couple of moments. Going to Kansas with Linda Thompson-Ditch right here on The Pulse.